Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
You're listening to the Rumour Mill on Love Sport with me, Alex Crook. Graham Butler has joined me in the studio. Between now and 10, we're going to be talking all things transfers from Manchester United to Arsenal, Juventus and Tottenham. Graham, I really feel like the transfer market is just beginning to hot up now as various Premier League clubs return for pre-season training, and they're now trying to really get their eggs in a basket, aren't they?
It is. I think you just hit the nail on the head about the pre-season. It's sort of starting to feel like the new season now. You know, we've had this sort of grace period of ending the Champions League final, and we still had the interest in that with it being two English sides. And so the season kind of went on a little bit longer than is normal for the English teams and stuff. So we've had that little bit of grace now. The good weather's back, and I think the vibe is everyone just wants to get the ball rolling now. And as we're going to probably talk about in a minute, the Wan-Bissaka deal that went through, I think will just now be kind of like a snowball effect. And you will just see deals starting to sort of take shape and get over the line.
I mean, we're going to be talking about Wan-Bissaka and what it means for Manchester United, but it's interesting for Palace as well, because it's a huge windfall for them in terms of £50 million for a player who hasn't played much football. But if you're Wilfried Zaha now, you're going to be really frustrated, aren't you? Because they don't need to sell Zaha.
No, they don't. Like you just said, £50 million to get that money for him is fantastic for Crystal Palace. It really is, on the back of one good season. I'm not going to throw my eggs in one basket at a minute and start raving about him, but I think
saw at the under-21 European Championships, he's still got
flaws
to iron out.
My foresight and my opinion would have been another season at Palace would have not probably enhanced his reputation, but it would have helped his development as a footballer. He would have had more defending to do. He'd have grown and matured as a player. Going to Man United at this time in his career is it a strange move? Probably in this day and age, mate. Probably not. But I would have looked at Zaha when he left Palace and went to Man United at that age. It was a massive jump for him, and he failed. And I just think Man United is such a cutthroat club that Dalot went there with a decent reputation. That has killed him. They're now looking to move him on. Wan-Bissaka goes there. It's £50 million. He's got a heck of a lot of pressure on his shoulders to perform from day one. If he doesn't, question marks are going to be start being asked of the board, of the manager, of Wan-Bissaka. And at 21 years old, does he really need that pressure? I think if he'd have stayed at Palace for another year, he'd have matured as a player. He'd have ironed out some creases that he's still got in his game at a club that he knows if he makes a mistake, he's going to play again next week. He's going to get chances to iron out these mistakes. Man United, if he has one bad game, who's to say he's not going to be benched?
In fairness to Zaha, when he went to Man United, David Moyes was the manager, and you know, I think maybe Stormzy got it right about him this weekend.
Yeah.
On the subject of Wilfried Zaha, of course, the club he's been linked with is Arsenal. And moving seamlessly, I'm delighted to say we've got Lois Langton, chair of the Arsenal Independent Supporters Trust, on the line. Lois, very good evening to you.
Good evening.
Is Wilfried Zaha a player you'd like to see at Arsenal? It seems strange to me because it's been well documented that you don't have the biggest transfer budget in the world. To spend
Absolutely.
It all on a player in an area where you're actually pretty stocked with talent, when it's pretty clear to me you need defensive reinforcement, it just doesn't add up.
Although I think the rumour mill goes into overdrive, obviously, at this stage of the season. And you, as Arsenal supporters, really, you can believe nothing until we see a player in a shirt. So I agree with what you're saying about Zaha. I've got a lot of time for him. I think he's a great player. Is he what we need? The immediate answer would probably be no, and certainly at that price. When you look at some of the younger players that we've got knocking at the door to get into the first team, I think if you ask a lot of Arsenal supporters between Rhys Nelson or Wilfried Zaha, we'd probably go for Rhys over Wilfried Zaha.
I mean, you mentioned the rumour mill is in full swing. That's why we've got this programme called The Rumour Mill. But one of the rumours coming out of Arsenal is that if Wilfried Zaha did sign, then that maybe would clear the way for Aubameyang to move, maybe even do a Robin Van Persie and Alexis Sanchez and go to Manchester United. Is that just paper talk? How would the fans react to that?
Well, I think it feels a great deal like deja vu again, having that, although Aubameyang is really in the same category as Robin Van Persie, who'd been with us for a number of years, obviously. I think, you know, we're in such a difficult limbo situation at the moment because we have spent money on players in the past, query whether they were the right players, and we now got, apart from a couple of players, a largely average squad that needs wholesale changes being made to it. But is there any value in just taking our world-class players, selling them on to free up transfer funds to be able to buy perhaps only one other replacement player or a couple of average players? That's not going to advance us. That doesn't feel like a plan to anybody. So if we are in this situation where we haven't got the funds to spend on new players, and there's a whole separate conversation that can be had about that, then it feels as though, you know, for many supporters, I think, you know, we'd rather put our eggs in the basket of having the academy players coming through rather than just keep looking to sell on players and try and fill in some of the other gaps with lesser quality players. Your ideal squad is always going to be a healthy mix of quality players and academy players. But at the moment, it feels as though we can't quite decide where we want to go with that.
Lois, touching on the academy players that you mentioned there, a story come out during the week that I was quite interested in reading from Connor Bramble, who I believe you signed from Hednesford Town. A young fullback who Wenger signed and was tipped to, you know, push on. And obviously, he's not just going to sign for the sake of it. He left this week and stated that there will be more academy players leaving because of the way the club is run. When you look at someone like Reece Nelson moving abroad to Germany and doing really well, can you actually see Reece coming back and saying, no, I don't want to go back to Arsenal. I'm going to stay abroad and I'm going to develop my career abroad and just look at someone like Jadon Sancho and say it can be done abroad and I'm going to force myself into the international side by playing abroad?
I think you could very easily see that happening. And it's strange because Arsenal have got this image of being a club that gives young players a chance. But actually, that goes back to the pre-Arsene Wenger days, you know, when we had players who'd come through the ranks. Under Arsene Wenger, very few players properly came through our academy system. Ashley Cole, Jack Wilshere, probably the only two that I can think of off the top of my head. Others such as Cesc Fabregas were players who we bought at 16. I don't count them as academy players because they've had their core training elsewhere. So, you know, we need to start living up to this notion that we are a club that gives youth an opportunity. And we're not the only club guilty of it. But Manchester City have got money to throw around on players. We haven't. So if it is a choice between an average player that's going to be signed for 15, 20, 25 million or an academy product, I think I know where a lot of supporters would rather go. And I think it's going to be a dreadful shame if we don't give some of the crop that we've got coming through now an opportunity. Because if they don't get given the chance, how will we ever know if it's going to work or not?
That's a very, very valid point. My sort of point leading on to that was, can you see anyone in the academy, or do you see anyone, or do you hear anything that could replace Aaron Ramsey, who I think is an absolute, this is coming from a Tottenham supporter, but I think he's a massive loss to you guys.
I agree.
He's offered an awful lot in the time that he was there, and to let him go on a free transfer, and from what I hear, you might be able to hear different, Lois, but there doesn't seem like there's any replacement for him at all.
That's why I say I think we're in a really difficult limbo situation at the moment. Last season, every match where we excelled ourselves, had some of our best performances of the season, had Aaron Ramsey at the heart of midfield. We saw in the Europa League final how much he was missed. So I feel more sorrow over his departure than I have over a number of players in recent years. I really think he's going to leave a gaping hole this season. And coming through, there are the likes of Emil Smith Rowe, who's also very highly. The key thing to having academy players coming through and being given the opportunity to step into the shoes of the likes of Aaron Ramsey is that if you blood a few of them together, then they're mates, they're used to playing together, and that can add something different to just planting one player into a team. And, you know, we all saw it with the class of 92 at Manchester United, how all those players who played together for so long gelled together as soon as they transitioned into the first team. And if we're not going to have money to spend, and so that's a whole different topic around our ownership and some of the issues there, but if we're not going to, in my view, the next best option is to at least have those players who've come through the academy together stepping into the first team. And Emil Smith Rowe was given some opportunities last season, and he's obviously had injuries, but they really now need to start being blooded in more consistently. And we also see, you know, the likes of Guendouzi was signed last season. I think he's a great player, but he's the same age as some of the players that we've got in our academy system. So sometimes just because if they come through our academy and they're British boys, the fact they're not coming with a transfer fee doesn't make them any less capable of playing in the first team on a regular basis.
Danny Olmo has just put Spain 2-0 up in that European under-21 championship final against Germany. Bad mistake from the German goalkeeper, Olmo. Following up, surely, to put Spain's name on the trophy. One player who could be in an Arsenal shirt, probably will be in an Arsenal shirt next season, is Kieran Tierney, of course, from Celtic. We understand that Arsenal could pay as much as £18 million up front. The deal could rise to £25 million with various add-ons. What I want to ask you about here, Lois, is the somewhat inflammatory comments from Chris Sutton, the former Celtic player, of course, who said this: Tierney should be insulted by Arsenal's bid for him. Celtic and Scottish football should also be seeing disrespect in what the Gunners are offering. English clubs get away with transfer market murder, and they still do. A starting bid of 15 million smacks of disgusting contempt.
Well, I think that's still some bitterness perhaps left over from the Virgil van Dijk deal that saw him go for what obviously was a significant underpayment for, what was it, about 13 million when he went to Southampton. So I guess Celtic feel as if they've had their fingers burnt once already. Clearly, Celtic are going to value the player at one price and will value him at another. And
that's just the way of the market.
We don't want it to drag on through the whole summer with us going up in increments of 500,000 or something, and then it'll get dealt with on the final day of the transfer window. If we want him, if we've identified that he's the player, well then clearly we need to pay whatever the value is for him. But we're not operating from a great negotiating position because everybody knows we need to strengthen our defence, and everybody knows that we haven't got a huge amount for transfer funds. So, you know, we're limited in what we can do, and we're limited in that everyone knows that we need to buy defenders. So it's not as though we've got a great game of bluff that we can play.
Just finally though, Tierney, a positive signing for you? You happy with that one?
I can't pretend that I really know a lot about him. I mean, everything that I've heard seems pretty positive. You know, he's a young player who wants to progress his career. So, you know, it certainly seems like a promising signing if it's true.
Great stuff. Lois, thanks very much for joining us tonight. We'll speak to you again over the course of the summer.
Thanks very much.
Lois Langton there, Chair of the Arsenal Independent Supporters Trust. This is the Rumour Mill on Love Sport. We're going to be talking Aaron Wan-Bissaka and his big money move to Manchester United very shortly.
This is Love Sport.
Welcome back to the Rumour Mill on Love Sport. I'm Alex Crook. Graham Butler is with me in the studio up until 10 o'clock on this Sunday evening. We've already talked in great detail about Arsenal and the latest going-ons at the Emirates. Let's hear now from Ryan Bowdy, football writer and author of The Next Big Thing. Now, this is quite pertinent, your book, Ryan, because, of course, Manchester United have just signed who they hope will be the next big thing in Aaron Wan-Bissaka. £50 million for a player who's only played 40 games in the Premier League. Your take on that?
Yeah, it's a very high billing for a guy, as you said, who's still relatively inexperienced. But I guess that's the modern game now. You pay a premium for a young English player from a Premier League club, which they've done. But from my perspective, looking at the deal and analysing Wan-Bissaka as a player, they could have somebody there who's going to be there right back for the next 10, 12, 15 years even. So I think there's value to be had there, it all works out.
Yeah, I was hearing somebody talk about this earlier and saying, actually, it's not that much of a gamble when you think that the likes of Alexis Sanchez are on £350,000 a week at Old Trafford. Wan-Bissaka won't be on anywhere near that, maybe 70, 80 perhaps. Big rise from his £10,000 a week at Palace. But actually, if you look at that, in terms of the wages linked with the transfer fee, it's relatively low risk, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's an interesting thing to look at too. I think that's definitely something United need to rectify as well. I think they've got a few high earners who are getting up there in age, and Alexis Sanchez is obviously the headliner when it comes to that kind of thing. So It's in the Wan-Bissaka deal, they've paid a lot of money for him, but as you say, he's a player who's very young. He's still got a lot of developing to do. He's not on a huge wage packet compared to a lot of the current players at United. So there's resale value there, and that even if things don't quite work out, they might not get 50 million back for him, but they might still get 20 or 30, and then he'll be easier to move on if things do go downhill than, for example, an Alexis Sanchez will be now, because he's 30 years old and he's on £500,000 a week. So I think it's, in many ways, if you kind of look beneath the headline number of the 50 million, it's a very palatable deal for United.
Is it right, Ryan, that he was almost released by Palace as a 14-year-old?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I did a piece about him for The Independent just a couple of weeks ago, where I went back and spoke to some of the coaches who worked with him at Palace. I spoke to the man responsible for signing him as an 11-year-old, Crystal Palace's academy manager, and also Kevin Keane, who was the first team coach there, who first decided to play him at right back when he was 18. So he came through at Palace, and by the age of sort of 14 or so, when he was a winger in the youth teams, he was being considered for release. There was a lot of debate about whether or not to keep him on. There were advocates for him within the academy, but there were some who were feeling that he's probably not going to make the grade. So I think it's to his credit that he's kicked on. It's all down to his own hard work and his adaptability too, when he got the chance to play it right back in that now famous training session where he had to mark off with Zaha and did a brilliant job. The way he's adapted since then and put the graft in to learn a new trade, and it's quite remarkable when you think about his playing style now, that even as a former winger, his defensive side of his game is probably the strongest aspect of his game. He's all about tenacity and accuracy in 1v1 challenges, and if anything, it's going forward where United are going to want to see some improvement from him.
Graham, you've been in dressing rooms. You know how it works in football, and you know the scary numbers in terms of youngsters who actually make the grade. I mean, it's so easy for players like Wan-Bissaka to slip through the net. There's going to be hundreds, thousands of players playing probably in non-league football week in, week out who could under different circumstances have done a job at a much higher level. It's the sliding doors moment, isn't it?
It is. A lot of it, I'll be honest, a lot of it is luck. You've got to be in the right place at the right time. Yes, I think the mental side of things is very, very important. You have to have that right mentality to take the knockbacks, to take the heartache and the criticism and the bad games and the mistakes and learn from them. And if he was nearly released from Palace at 14, that could have, like you just said, it could have gone completely the opposite way. And at 21, he could be playing League 2 non-league football. But there was something, there's obviously some character in there somewhere. And he's got his head down and he's learnt a new position. I think Ryan just hit on it. He was either a winger or a centre forward back in the day or something like that. He's found himself at right back and he's learnt his trade. And he's got himself this move. And I was going to ask Ryan just where he thinks his career could go now. You know, he's got into the Palace side very, very early and nailed it, completely nailed it for a year. Yes, there was mistakes like we highlighted earlier. He's not the full package and there's loads to iron out. Where now can he go in his career? Where now can he go with England? You know, you've got Alexander-Arnold there now, who I think will be England's right back for years if he stays on that level pegging that he's at now. With Wan-Bissaka going to Man United for 50 million, the spotlight's going to be on him now. Where is his career go? Is he going to be as good as Alexander-Arnold? Is he going to overtake him? What has he got in him to take Alexander-Arnold's spot, Kyle Walker's spot, and be England's right back for future?
That's a very interesting point. I think the England call-up is going to be in the offing. That's going to happen soon. The Trent Alexander-Arnold thing is really interesting because I think if you combine their two skill sets, you've got the perfect fullback. I think if there are any holes in Alexander-Arnold's game, it's that he's still liable to the occasional positional lapse. He's perhaps not as strong in the 1v1s as Wan-Bissaka is. But of course, going forward, he's phenomenal. His delivery is as good as anything we've seen since Beckham, pretty much. So I think they're going to vie for that spot. And I think it might be the case that Southgate evaluates on a case-by-case basis who's playing which game, depending on the opposition. If he needs someone to do a marking job on a particularly tricky winger, Wan-Bissaka might come in for that. If you're up against opposition where you feel like the flanks are now needing to attack, and Alexander-Arnold could play. There's also, of course, the option of playing them both, because Alexander-Arnold has played in midfield a lot at youth level for Liverpool, so he could try that whole thing that that I think it was Ericsson tried back in the day of playing Wayne Bridge and Ashley Cole down the same flank. So we could see something like that. And of course, you've got Reece James as well, the young Chelsea boy who was at Wigan last year, who could play right back too, who's going to be a real star of the future. So I think England are pretty set for right backs in the next decade or so. It's going to be really interesting to see who can really nail down that place. But yeah, like I said, Wan-Bissaka might not have quite the same level of delivery as Alexander Arnold at the moment in an attacking sense, but I think that is something that will develop in his game. He's talked about it, when he was a young winger at Crystal Palace, he used to try and pull off all the kind of tricks that Yannick Bolasie was doing in the first team, and he's been waiting for the opportunity to do a bit more of that. I think he's played in quite a restricted counter-attacking system at Palace, where defending is his first and foremost priority. So maybe now at United he'll be off the leash a little bit, and then get the chance to show those old wingers instincts, and we'll see how he does.
Talk to me about Paul Pogba, if we can, Ryan, because I know you've also written an article about that in the recent past. Lots of conjecture over the course of the summer. Will he go to Real Madrid? Will he go to Juventus? Will he stay at Manchester United? Now, Graham's already out himself as a Spurs fan. I'm a United fan. I'm really torn on this because I don't like what Pogba represents. I don't like the power he's got in the dressing room. I don't like the fact that he only decides to play when he wants to. But equally, as we've seen, and we saw it during that run that got Ole Gunnar Solskjaer the job, when Pogba plays well, United play well. There's no debate about that. And would I rather have a midfield with Paul Pogba in it or Longstaff from Newcastle, who nearly joined Portsmouth on loan this time last season? Just let that sink in. Nearly went to League One on loan. Now he's being talked about as a £25 million player. What's your view on it, Ryan? Can you see the conundrum?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot to unpack. There's a lot of layers to this. And of course, things haven't gone to plan for Pogba. 3 years in now, I think we'd have expected quite a bit more from him. Even putting aside the price tag, which, you know, he didn't decide to be an £89 million player. It was United who paid that fee for him. But even just looking at his pure ability alone, he hasn't delivered to quite the level expected of him. But at the same time, over the last 3 years, he is United's most talented player. And I do think he has been the one that, you know, has been the catalyst for any of the good performances they've had over the last 3 years. So losing him would be a blow, whichever way you look at it. And I think this is a summer for United where they've already got a lot of holes to fill. Ander Herrera's left on a Bosman, so there's already a kind of vacancy in the midfield that United need to fill. So do they really want to be thinking about replacing not only another midfielder but their superstar at the same time? It'll be a difficult thing to do. But on the other hand, there's not really much sense in keeping a player who doesn't want to be there anymore, especially somebody with Pogba's profile who, I guess, he wouldn't be too shy about letting it known that he's not too happy to be where he is. So it might be the case that if he does begin to agitate, you're better off cutting the cord and just seeing that you get the best deal possible for him and then looking at who to bring in. But that's an unenviable task, to be honest, because as I wrote in that piece you mentioned, Pogba's a very unique player. Whether you're a fan of him or not, if you look at his skill set and what he brings, he's very unique for a central midfield player in the jobs that he does. To find somebody to do that for you is going to be very, very difficult, to find an individual to fulfil all the attributes that Pogba brings to the table. So I think United might be better off looking at increasing and improving the areas that they already need to improve. And in doing so, perhaps look for players who can each bring a little bit of what Pogba offers. That way, if it does go, then you've kind of already replaced the aggregate of what you lose in Pogba.
It seems that Pogba's future at Old Trafford revolves heavily around what Real Madrid decide to do. I mean, they spent big money already this summer after a poor season by their lofty standards last time around. But I'm just struggling to believe the reports in market today that it's either Eriksen or Pogba who is going to go to the Bernabeu, because they're very different players, aren't they? You can't really compare their skill sets.
Yeah, exactly. I think traditionally Eriksen plays a little bit further forward, plays on the other side of the pitch as well, not from the right, tends to play from the right, whereas Pogba plays from the left. So they're far from an identical of one another. It's interesting. It's I know Madrid are the, you know, they basically print money over there. They're the biggest club in the world. They're marketed like nobody else, so you know, they probably do have the funds to spend more than any other club, but they've already spent an awful lot of money. I'd imagine if they were to go for Pogba, it might be a case of offering a player or two in return rather than a straight cash deal. Not sure whether that would be attractive to United, especially considering I think a lot of the players will be looking to move on are coming towards the end of their peak. So Yeah, I don't know whether they could do a straight cash deal for the kind of money United are looking for. So there might be a kind of a Mexican standoff in some regards, with Pogba wanting to go but United not really wanting to sell. And we'll see who's got the stronger will in that sense.
Another power struggle involving Paul Pogba at Old Trafford. Who'd have thought it? Ryan, thanks very much for joining us tonight, and all the best with the book.
Thank you. Cheers.
That's Ryan Bowdy there, author of The Next Big Thing. Just before we go to the ad break, Graham, one other Manchester United-related piece of transfer gossip, which knocked me sideways, really. Manchester United considering a surprise move for Aston Villa's playoff final hero, John McGinn. Now, no big problem with that, although it's a big step up from the Championship of the Premier League, let alone to Manchester United. They're talking about £50 million. He cost Aston Villa £3 million. He's paid for Cheltenham Town not that long ago.
I don't know whether the journalist that has thought up this transfer maybe might have had one too many on the sauce last night and just thought to himself, do you know what? That is so unbelievable that it's believable. And
it's almost too mad to make up.
I reckon he's been out last night and he said to his mate, do you know what? I've kind of come up with the most random transfer ever. And he's gone on a bit of paper and just gone, da 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 da, there. Right, John McGinn. You know when you see in the paper, you see, right, get your month of birth and your date of birth, and that will be your transfer this summer. He probably was born on October the 13th and has come up with John McGinn and Man United. And he's gone, right, I'm going to print a story about this and make everyone believe it. And now we're talking about it on radio. John McGinn to Man United for £50 million. Go to a break. I'm not...
Do you know what? Actually, you may have something. Because I'm not saying it happens all the time, but when I was covering Portsmouth for the National Papers, and Harry Redknapp had let the cat out of the bag, they were going to sign a striker. But he wouldn't tell us who. And I said to a radio colleague of mine, I was working for the National Papers, and I said, I bet it's Andy Cole, you know, veteran player coming to the end of his Premier League career. Harry had already signed the likes of Kanu and Merson. So I took a little bit of a flyer, and then 3 days later he signed Andy Cole. So, sometimes they come true. I don't think John McGinn's going to go to Man United.
Straight
though,
on
that.
Sky Bet later. Put a couple of quid on John McGinn to Man United.
Crikey. Great stuff there though from Ryan. Nonetheless, 9:32 on this Sunday night. Next up, we're going to be joined by Chloe Beresford, our Serie A expert. Love Sport. You're listening to the Rumour Mill on Love Sport. I'm Alex Crook. Graham Butler is with me in the studio. Delighted to say joining us now is Chloe Beresford, our Serie A expert. Chloe, evening to you.
Good evening.
Lots of news, as always, coming out of Italy. Let's start with a done deal, as we like to say in the industry. Rabiot to Juventus on a free transfer, turning down Manchester United by all accounts.
Yeah, I think it's a really big signing for them. You know, obviously with having Ronaldo, and they've got a very clear aim that they want to win the Champions League. He clearly likes the project there, and I can't say I blame him, really.
It's going to be some midfield possibly made up of free transfers, isn't it?
Yeah, they've done really well on the free transfer front, and it's also the latest in a long line of French midfielders that they've had. You know, the likes of Paul Pogba and Didier Deschamps, Zinedine Zidane in the past. So it's also continuing this tradition, really.
Germany have got a goal back in that under-21 European Championship final into added time. Spain lead by 2-1. Sorry, Chloe, on the subject of players possibly heading to Italy, can you give us any update on Romelu Lukaku, continues to publicly hanker for that move to Inter Milan and a reunion with Antonio Conte? Is it going to happen?
Yeah, well, it seems like it. I think the problem has been negotiating over the details. And obviously, Inter will want to look to offload Mauro Icardi, who they've had several problems with on a sort of a personal level. And I think they were trying to get United to take him, and maybe they weren't so keen on that. So I think it looks like a move that is going to happen, but it's just working out a mutually beneficial deal for the two clubs.
Chloe, just sticking with Juventus ever so quickly, obviously Rabiot signing on a free transfer. There was a lot of talk about Ndombele, I still don't know how to pronounce his name, but there was still a lot of talk about him potentially, Juventus being involved with him, and Spurs, as per every single season, dilly-dallying over transfers and enabling other clubs to come in. Was there any link between Ndombele and Juventus at all?
Not that I have seen, not a massive amount in the Italian press, I don't think. I think that one's been pretty quiet on that front.
So it wasn't like a sort of, do you reckon it was a smokescreen to try and get some more money out of Spurs?
Yeah, I guess so. There's a lot of stuff like that in the transfer window, though, isn't there, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of posturing and hankering. Just back to that Lukaku situation, I just wonder, because, of course, Manchester United were quite public in their pursuit of Ivan Perisic a few years ago, the Croatian midfielder who plays, of course, for Inter Milan. Inter Milan weren't willing to lower their demands. I wonder if this, in some way, is United almost getting their own back for that transfer not happening, the fact they're going to hold out for the big money.
I don't know. I mean, I think Jose Mourinho was really determined to get him. He made loads of statements about liking him, and you know, but they never, Inter never gave way on that. So I don't know. I don't know whether it's a revenge thing or just, you know, wanting to get the right deal. Because I think they've spoken about a 2-year loan and then an option to buy. So.
Doesn't strike me as much of a deal from a United perspective. A £9 million pound loan fee for a player they paid £75 million for, what, 3 years
That's
ago?
That's right. Yeah, and they've got financial fair play to think of. So I think they'll be, you know, they'll be haggling for some time over that one.
Another name being thrown about recently, I've seen a lot, is Joachim Andersen, the centre-half, I think, from Sampdoria, is it? Is it Sampdoria?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
What do you know about that? Is there anything substantial anywhere?
I don't think anything too substantial. I think it's been more rumours that he's wanted by a number of clubs rather than any one club in particular. There's quite a few players from Sampdoria that have done exceptionally well under their manager Marco Giampaolo, who's now gone to Milan. So you know, there looks to be plenty of interest there, and I think Sampdoria have proved in the past that for the right price, they'll let any player go, really.
I'm fascinated by this on-off transfer. It involves Kostas Manolas, Napoli, trying to work out personal terms. I'm reading by the end of the financial year, which in Italy is tonight, Roma want the deal done because they need to register a profit by the end of June the 30th.
Yeah, it looks like it's gone ahead. I've just read actually that that deal seems to have been done. So that's a great signing for Napoli. I think Roma have received 18 million plus the midfielder Diawara from Napoli for that one. So it's quite an interesting switch. If they do keep Koulibaly and Manolas together will be a really excellent centre back pairing.
You've obviously seen that my list of questions in front of me, because I was going to ask you about Koulibaly and the fact that he is another player who has been constantly linked with Manchester United. Could that happen? I mean, listen, he's going to be an upgrade on Smalling and Jones. Mind you, myself and Graham have been an upgrade on that particular pair.
Yeah. I think he was interviewed because he's playing at AFCON and he's playing for Senegal, and he was interviewed and he said that he didn't know whether he'd be staying at Napoli or not. So it does
it's always
seem
leaving
a bit,
the door open, isn't it?
It does seem a little bit up in the air. And obviously, through several transfer windows, he's been really heavily linked with clubs in England. And so Napoli are going to struggle to hang on to him, I think. He is absolute quality, and there's no doubt that he would do well abroad. But Napoli, I think, are holding out for €150 million,
wow,
which is said to be his release clause. So, you know, that's about £135 million. So it's a lot of money. Depends on whether anybody's willing to stump up that cash.
Well, by the time they spent £50 million on John McGinn, you know, the bank account's going to be running very dry at Old Trafford. Talk to us about Gonzalo Higuain. Of course, he had a pretty miserable spell really at Chelsea at the end of last season. Where's he likely to be playing his club football next year?
I don't know. Obviously, I don't think Juventus will want him, even though they've now got Maurizio Sarri, who he's obviously worked with before. I have heard a whisper that he may go to Roma, but the problem is that Juve have got to see some kind of eventual return on the, because they paid $90 million for him, I think three, maybe four seasons ago. So they can't just let him go and write that off. So they're going to have to find somebody who's willing to actually pay for him eventually, even if it's an initial loan. And, you know, he's not really shown the kind of form that was going to make clubs queue up for him. So it's a bit of a problem that they've come up against, really.
One name you mentioned earlier, Mauro Icardi, is a centre forward I love. I think he's a brilliant centre forward, and I think he'd be brilliant in the Premiership. But it's no
Premier League, Graham.
Premier League. There's no question of his ability, but obviously everyone knows about the personal problems that he's had and the dramas that he's had at Inter. Are you surprised? Well, couldn't speak to anyone better. Are you surprised that he hasn't moved on from Inter, and what has kept him there, and what has kept him from not being moved on anywhere?
I think although he's made mistakes, he has been quite a loyal player to Inter. And, you know, he wanted to play. He'd never played in the Champions League before. And then the one before, they got into the Champions League and he'd made his debut. And then it all went wrong after that when he was dropped. But he sort of been a late starter in that. Into getting into the Champions League, and I think he was kind of waiting for his opportunity, but now it seems, you know, they've got Antonio Conte coming in who doesn't suffer any fools and he won't tolerate that kind of behaviour. So I think now is probably the right time for him to look to move on, because he's clearly got the quality. He just needs harnessing it in the right way, because he's a difficult character to deal with, and, you know, his wife being his agent just makes problems even worse.
Yeah, never work with a loved one. That's the golden rule, isn't it?
Yeah.
Loads to discuss. The producers put various questions in front of me. One I want to ask you, first of all, Leeds could lure Italy legend Francesco Totti out of retirement after he was sensationally linked with a move to Elland Road.
That was just a crazy one, isn't it? You just couldn't make that up.
What's more mad, that one or John McGinn? I mean, he's had a public fallout, hasn't he, with Roma?
He has. He's not happy with the American owners at Roma. I think it's a bit, reading between the lines, it's a bit six of one and a half dozen of the other. He says he's been in a director sort of role and a backroom role, and he says they've not let him they've not involved him in decisions, they've not let him do what he wants to do. But equally, you know, he's had to learn the ropes from the beginning. That's a job that he's never done before, and he can't just expect to immediately be calling all the shots. And I think it's a bit of his ego mixed in with some mistakes from the club too. So he's had this very public falling out. He's not just gone away quietly and said, oh, one day I'll tell my story. He's just absolutely trashed the current owners in the public. So, and I think he feels that he was forced to retire too early. But, I mean, he's been out of the game, what, about 18 months now? So it's...
He's 42. You know,
yeah, I think he needs to sort of give up and move on, really.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. What about the big news, not transfer-related, but AC Milan kicked out the Europa League this week for breaking financial fair play rules? I think most of us expected a more lenient punishment, didn't we?
They weren't actually kicked out. It's been misreported quite a lot. It was actually an agreement made between Milan and UEFA that... The sentence was kind of made before the current owners were in charge, because there's been a lot of mismanagement. And they said that they'd be banned from Europe in, I think, 2021-22 season. And there'd been appeals and all sorts of delays. And Milan sort of said, look, how about we step down from Europe this season and sort of wipe the slate clean, and then that's the end of all the appeals and all the dragged out proceedings that have been going on. And UEFA have actually accepted that. And I think it's a really smart decision, because it allows Milan to get the punishment out of the way, draw a line under it and move on with the new owners that they've got in a more positive direction and get back to where they want to be.
And just finally, it does look like De Ligt is going to choose Juventus ahead of Manchester United. Would that be a good move for Juventus? Good move for him, you think?
I think it's a brilliant move for Juventus. I think they've needed... Last season's outing in Europe showed that they need another good quality centre-back. And he can learn from Giorgio Chiellini. He can really grow and develop there. I think it's an ideal place for him, and I think he's made the right choice.
Chloe, brilliant stuff. Thanks for joining us. We look forward to seeing Totti at Elland Road very soon.
That's brilliant. Thanks very much.
That's Chloe Beresford there, our Serie A expert, bringing us bang up to date with the incomings and the outgoings over in Italy. We are rapidly hurtling towards the end of the show, but joining us next, we'll have Ricky Sacks of the Spurs Fan Show to give us the last word in all things Tottenham.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
Welcome back to the last part of the Rumour Mill here on Love Sport on this Sunday night. We've been to Italy, we've been to Manchester, we've been to North London, and now we're off to Mexico to join Ricky Sacks from the Spurs Fan Show. On your honeymoon, Ricky, clearly you're enjoying yourself.
Well, I am now. I mean, I've sneaked away for 5 minutes. It's been tough to know to you chaps, but this Mbembele story just keeps developing and developing, so impossible to not be one that you want to be reporting on.
Yeah, give us the latest.
So it looks like, according to L'Équipe, along with RMC Sport and The Guardian as well, all reporting that Spurs have now reached an agreement in full now with Lyon for the signing of the player. It looks like it's going to be €62 million plus an additional €10 million on add-ons. There still needs to be some fine-lining in terms of the player himself for Spurs, but the willingness of the player to join the club should hopefully mean that the transfer is getting ever closer. And I think everybody just wants it to be announced now, and I get that. But what there does need to be an element of thinking here is that he's a top player. This is going to be a club record fee for the club. So these transfers, they do take time. They're not going to go overnight. This one will, I still think, drag on for the next few days. But I think it's a case of, you know, be patient, and good things do come to those who wait. And by God, we're waiting a long time to get a top player. And that's exactly what Ndombele is. And obviously what we hope is going to happen is going to come in, he's going to hit the ground running and adapt very quickly to the Premier League.
Rick, good evening, mate. Obviously him coming in is one that I think a lot of us all over social media and in general have sort of highlighted for 12 months now. It was almost at the beginning a sort of fantasy signing. You know, you'd never see us signing someone like that. He's that good. With him coming in, that is obviously one central midfield spot taken. I can see him being there for the foreseeable until we sell him for double the price next season. But who now can you see moving on from there? There's talk of obviously Dier, Wanyama, but will Wanyama pass a medical anywhere else? I'm not too sure. Where do you see now that midfield going?
That's a good question, Graham. I mean, I like to think we can be here for more than just 12 months. I like to think
so do I, mate. So do I.
I think the club getting to the Champions League final, all that has done is gutting us to lose it. It did put Spurs, I think, in the forefront of a lot of players across Europe, top players in their mind. I think Spurs are, you know, a rightly established team now, playing Champions League football on the regular. I've got a wonderful manager in Maurizio Pochettino. And just to put the point on it, that, you know, Ndombele signing, this is a player that Maurizio Pochettino has wanted. It's his number one target. Daniel Levy's on the verge of delivering that. So we have to bear that in mind now, a bigger coup that is for Maurizio as well. It's a player he wants to work with. I think there will be a lot of changes this summer in terms of players going out. I can see both maybe Dier and Wanyama leaving. I think what maybe edges the reasoning behind Wanyama going as opposed to Dier is just with Wanyama, he has had injury after injury, whereas Dier, he has got that versatility in his game. He's a player that's well-liked by Maurizio Pochettino. So if you were to ask me on the spot, who do I see going out of those two, I would say more leaning towards Wanyama then I do Dier. But they've both been really unlucky with injuries. You know, today they can both be top players. They just haven't really kicked on. And Spurs, where they are now, you know, the kind of player Ndombele is, no disrespect to those other two guys, but I think he's of a completely different level of class. So what we have to hope now is this guy comes in, hits the ground running. And if he doesn't hit the ground running, by God, give him time, because we've seen some of the games in the Lyon shirt. You know, he ran for them in the Champions League last season and was absolutely unbelievable. An unbelievable player that I think belongs to Soko in midfield and Harry Winks. It completely changes Tottenham's game. And I think for Spurs, we've talked about the need of fresh blood, you know, reinvigoration. A signing like that, what that must do for that dressing room when they see a guy like that coming in. You know, so much ability, still so young, has got the potential to go on and be even a better player. And under Maurizio, you know, you can guarantee he's going to develop him even further.
You mentioned the dressing room there. He's on about £60,000 a week at Lyon. Clearly his wages are going to increase significantly when he moves to Spurs. Is that a concern for you, that if they smash their pay structure to get this signing done, that suddenly other players are going to come and want a pay rise? We've seen it happen at other clubs, and it may, in a way, disrupt the harmony. Just playing devil's advocate.
Can I be honest with you? I mean, Spurs are in a situation now where they have to either stay as they are or jump. And the fact of the matter is that if Spurs want to go on to become a top club and compete for Premier League and still get into that stage of the Champions League, they're going to have to, at some point, look to change that wage structure. When they smashed it with Harry Kane, you know, Toby Alderweireld had a contract on that table for a long time, so has Christian Eriksen. And these haven't been bad contracts. Now, Spurs have to make that decision this summer in terms of what club they want to be. Do they want to be a top four club and just to be compete for top four? Or do they seriously genuinely believe they've got enough about them now to try and challenge the likes of Man City and Liverpool for the Premier League, try and get again to the latter stages of the Champions League, possibly even a final? And the only way you can do that is by investing in real top players, giving the manager what he wants. And I can tell you something, Maurizio Pochettino won't be staying at Tottenham unless he doesn't believe he's going to get the full backing of the board. And what this signing does for me is a statement of intent from Daniel Levy to say, look, we admire the work you've done with this squad, we want to keep you, we want to try and give you the tools that you need to take Tottenham to the next level. And I just don't think Maurizio would stay unless he has got those assurances that he can take the club to the next level. I mean, the great thing for me I'm seeing now is that, of course, I don't want to lose Christian Eriksen, for example, but the player that Spurs are being lined up as a replacement for him in Giovanni Lo Celso, I'm not going to sit here and claim that I'm a La Liga guru, but he looks like a really good player. He's played in Europe. So the most important thing is that Spurs are letting players go. They've now already got a plan in place to replace Eriksen with someone, hopefully, of like-for-like quality. That's what you have to hope.
Rick, moving on from the likes of obviously Eriksen, Lo Celso and Ndombele, is this Jack Clark enigma? Obviously, there's a lot of talk that the deal was more or less done. He's passed his medical, etc., etc. I was reading stuff today that you will probably know a lot more than most, is that he's going back to Leeds on loan for the season. I find that really strange.
Yeah, I mean, Maurizio has obviously had a close relationship with the Leeds manager there, Marcelo Bielsa. I mean, he must know in his mind if he's a player he wants to work with in the immediate future. And if he doesn't, and if he's a player that he's going to come in and he's only going to be on the periphery of the squad, and I think Maurizio is one of those guys that he does really like to have the players around him rather than loan him. But I think the only difference here is that he does know Marco Bielsa's way of coaching, his philosophy. And it's very similar to Maurizio Pochettino's, which I think is one of the reasons why they does go on loan. It would obviously be back to Leeds straight away because he had a manager there with a similar philosophy. And of course, we're so desperate for signings now. It's one of those where, at the same time, you want to sign this player, let them go again. But at the same time, if he's not going to be ready, there's no point in just bringing a player in for the sake of bringing him in and around the squad where he's not going to get much game time. If he's going to stay at Leeds for another year and improve, I mean, he didn't get that many games last year, but the ideal was, you know, that he looked really, really good in the games he did have at Leeds, and that's earning this transfer. But at the same time, he's going to need regular football. And Spurs are in a position now where they do need to come in with players that are going to improve that first team. It's no good going to get squad players anymore. Spurs need to bring players in that are going to make an immediate impact to that first team. And Graham, you know as well as me, towards the end of the season, the way they were lucky to get top four, let's be honest, in the end. So I think there's a real need for Spurs to go in this transfer window and bring in players that are actually going to improve the first team. Ndombele does that. I think, you know, Lo Celso coming in for Eriksen, I think it's a shrewd bit of business if they can get that deal over the line. The issue at the moment is we don't know where Toby Alderweireld is standing in his future, Kieran Trippier. There is still question marks over the squad. That's why I do expect Spurs to run late into the transfer window, which obviously is always typical for Tottenham. I do think there'll be more business to be done. Sessegnon Young's another one where Spurs can look at that player and know he already wants to join the club. They're in a situation where they have to try and get that asking price down from Fulham because you can't be paying $50 million for a Championship player. You just can't be. And Daniel Levy will leave that as late as possible. He knows the player wants to come to Tottenham. So that's one I think that will go probably right to the wire. Spurs will get that deal done. But they do need to get that additional midfielder sorted as quickly as possible in relation to whether Eriksen stays or goes. Because I still think even if Eriksen did stay, I think there's an argument where you could still need Lo Celso. I think Eriksen was playing slightly deeper last year and that's why you didn't see the best of him. So there's still a lot of twists and turns we've done this transfer window, but getting Ndombele in would be a real statement of intent.
Ricky, I know you'd love to stay and chat all night, but I do feel like you should probably go back to your honeymoon. So thanks very much for joining us, and we'll speak again soon.
No problem at all.
Cheers, Rick.
Thanks, chaps. Cheers, take care.
That's Ricky Sachs all the way from Mexico giving us the last word on Spurs. I'm just hearing Real Madrid are going to bid $60 million for John McGinn. You heard it here first. Seems an appropriate time to end the show. Sadly, like David Moyes' six-year contract at Manchester United, that ends today. We're out of time as well. My thanks
does it?
It does, yeah.
Bloody.
Incredible.
Blimey.
My thanks to Graham Butler for joining me in the studio. The Rumour Mill returns at the same time next Sunday. I've been Alex Crook. He's been Graham Butler. Thanks for listening. Good night.
This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.